podcast in the world. From WWE to DNA Impact, by way of the NWA, it's time for Reffin' It Up with legendary referee Brian Heppner and guest host, Mr. Reffin' Rant himself, Jimmy Corderas. An all-new episode starts in... This is Reffin' It Up.
Welcome back to Reffin' It Up. I am RJ. We hope that you had a fantastic holiday and a Merry Christmas. We also wish you a great new year. This week, we have a Reffin' Rewind with our guest, Deanna Perrazzo, from last October. Please stay tuned to all our social medias for a first guest of 2024 next week. Head over and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Reffin' It Up. Follow both Jimmy and Brian. Their links are right in the show notes. So each and every one of you, we want to thank you for supporting this podcast for the last year. And cheers to a fantastic 2024. If there is anything that you guys want to see us do, if you guys want us to do certain things, whether it be live shows, whether it be videos, whether it be whatever it may be, if you have a suggestion that you want the show to do, please let us know, any one of us and or myself. You can hit us up, like I said, on all social medias at Reffin' It Up, and let us know what you want to hear, what you want to see, all that good stuff. We have a lot of good stuff, a lot of good ideas that we want to bring to you possibly in 2024. So stay tuned for that and enjoy this next episode with Deanna Perrazzo. Brian, before we welcome in Deanna Perrazzo, let's just take a few moments here, just talk about her early career there. She debuted, or made her in-ring debut, in 2013 in D2W Professional Wrestling, went there for the Academy, debuted there alongside her trainer, Damian Adams. Both continued to train in Adams' training facility. And then she actually got extra training sessions alongside Rip Rogers at Ohio Valley Wrestling. Obviously, that's somebody that you're familiar with, Rip Rogers, right? Obviously, between with your dad and your uncle, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, sir.
So she ended up doing a lot of extra work with WWE in 2014 as she appeared in several skits as part of Adam Rose's Rosebuds, which I think a lot of you look back at it now and you see a lot of the NXT talent then in 2014-15, a lot of those talents, a lot of those men and women are part of, you know, Impact. They're part of AEW. They're part of WWE's main roster. So it's one of those things that you pretty much do whatever you got to do to get on screen and to get in front of a camera, get in a ring. When was the first time you remember seeing Deanna? Was it here at NXT and WWE, or did you not really see a lot of her until she got to TNA Impact?
I just remember her being on WWE programming, but I didn't know much about her at all. So getting to know her was actually, you know, in Impact Wrestling. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so that's where we became like friends and one-on-one conversations and things of that nature, where I really knew who she actually was.
Mm-hmm. Hey,
And what I was noticing down here, also through our show notes, is that, you know, just leading up to NXT, there were so many things that she did just to be seen to get into the business. It just amazes me as we do these podcasts what these guys and girls go through just to make it, you know. It's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause she ended up starting the rebirth of the women's, or the ROH women's division, as they call it, Women of Honor. As she made her ROH debut against Mandy Leon in Baltimore in July of 2015. But it's one of those things. If you want to start a women's division, I really think, and I'm not saying it because she's on our show today, and I'm not saying it because I'm a fan of hers. I am, don't get me wrong, but you start a women's division with Deonna Purrazzo.
Oh, without a doubt. I would have to say top five technical women wrestlers in the world. Just ground game, ground and pound, can do the intangibles that a lot of other women just simply can't do. Or men. I'm not comparing men, women to men. I'm just saying in general. Okay. As far as the league that she's in, which is women, there ain't much better. There really isn't. And that's why I'm also very, very excited to sit down and talk with her and go over you, her, and I with her match with Mickie James.
Yeah.
I mean, my gosh. I mean, can you get better than those two? I mean, so exciting stuff.
Yeah, because that's we're going to be talking about her match there with, like you said, with Mickie James from Hard Justice 2022. Was, I believe it was a Texas Street or Texas Death Match, I believe, right?
It was a Texas something. Yeah, I don't know if it was a Texas death match or just a Texas whoop-em.
Like
I don't know.
Yeah, it was like a street fight or something. Because I remember watching it again, and I sent you the YouTube. I'm like, holy crap.
It was awesome. They went nuts in that. They really did. I forgot how good it was until I went back and looked at it and watched it. Wow. They really killed each other. They did not hold back.
Well, and I think the build to it, too. And this is something obviously we'll talk with Deonna about. It's just the build for it, which is absolutely fantastic, I think. And because, you know, we'll talk about it obviously, but is the, you know, going to, you know, NWA Empower for the whole women's all women's pay-per-view. And that's really the, you really start the storytelling there. And I think you're friends with both. You know both very well. They just complement each other so well.
No, they do. They do. They work hand in hand. And just really cool that just to say that I worked with both of them in a huge match, title match. So it was just really cool. And I can't wait to go over it.
Yeah, that's something we'll talk about real in a little bit. But let's welcome her in now. The one, the only.
Hello.
Deonna Purrazzo. Welcome to the show, Deonna.
Nice, how are you?
Good.
Deonna,
we're just putting you over a little bit more.
Ooh. Just...
No, we just were talking about your the rebirth of the ROH Women's Division, Women of Honor, when you got there in 2015. And Brian and I both really agreed when you want to start a women's division, you start with Deonna Purrazzo.
Oh, thank you guys. That was, oh, like I was just thinking about it too, thinking about all the things we would talk about. And like Ring of Honor is such a like pivotal part of my career and kind of where like they just gave me a blank slate and said like, do whatever. And that's where the Virtuosa came to be. Everything about her is I learned just from doing in front of a Ring of Honor crowd.
Yeah, because that was right around when the pandemic happened. Excuse me. That was right, kind of similar. It's like you get that going, and then a couple of years down the road, you get the pandemic. It's like, holy crap. It's like, we got to get this going kind of thing.
Yeah, they, you know, so that when I started there, it was like back in 2015. So I was like a baby. I was like 19 or 20 years old, right? And going to Ring of Honor, maybe I was 21 for the first times. And then, you know, I left, did some other things. And yeah, the start of the pandemic, you know, I was with Impact. They reached out to me and were like, hey, you know, we're going to revamp our women's division. Would you want to be a part of it? And it was kind of awkward because it was like, you know, I was a free agent still. You know, I hadn't officially signed with Impact yet, but I had given, you know, my word that come January, I would. And that's when my contract would kick in. And, so I said to Gina Ring of Honor, like, look, out of respect for Impact and the deal that we have and what we're doing moving forward, I need to get with them. So it was just a long waiting period between, you know, when I got to actually work with Ring of Honor again, the end of last year, to when they had first asked me, which was, you know, 2020.
First of all, hello, Deonna.
Hello.
How are you?
We just jumped right in.
Well, it is my show. Hey, real quick, obviously we have show notes and things like that, and there's things that I noticed. So you did lots of things before in TNA, And I noticed, which is really, really strange and cool, that before you were, I guess, featured would be the right word, you did a explosion match losing to a lady by the name of Laurel Vanesse. Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
Can you explain to everybody who Laurel Vanesse is?
Laurel is Chelsea Green, my best friend.
How ironic is that?
Yeah.
Did you ever get frustrated with the process of trying to be where you're at now? Like, in other words, there were so many things, and I go through these notes and it's unbelievable. We just talked about before you got on there, what things you go through throughout your life in this business to be where you're at.
Yeah.
And gotta be a breaking point before you almost want to quit, I would think. Maybe not. But was it during your TNA run there that wasn't a run and then became one run? You know what I mean? Where were you kind of at your breaking point? What's in, like, damn it, let me the fuck in the door.
I think that I had like two of them. I think that, you know, with Impact, it was always, you know, I got brought in, I wrestled Laurel, I wrestled Madison Rayne, I wrestled Brooke Tessmacher. Like, I, you know, my very first, like, live television match was Knockouts Knockdown 2014. I wrestled Brooke Tessmacher, my 8th professional wrestling match ever. So I think that I was exposed to so much so early that I didn't go through, like, the indies where you don't get paid or never not making any money. Like, I kind of just got thrown right in, right? And it took a long time for me to get to that breaking point, you know? And with Impact, it was probably right after that loop with Chelsea, where we wrestled. And then I went to Japan like 2 weeks later. And I was just kind of like, this isn't working out. You know what I mean? Like, and I had things to work on, and Gail was honest with me about that. But it was frustrating. And then I came back from Japan. I was supposed to be in the Mae Young Classic, for WWE. And, you know, right up until 2 weeks before that, I was in the tournament. And then I was an extra. And I got to this breaking point of like, what do I need to do for one of these companies who are always happy to bring me in as the good hand to capitalize on me? What the fuck, you know?
Yeah, I totally get it.
Went to, you know, back to WWE and basically said, like, look, Ring of Honor's offering me a contract. I'm going to take that. And that's kind of how, you know, everything started there with their women's championship and all that back in, you know, the end of 2017-18. That didn't work out well, so I went to NXT. And then I had that second breaking point in NXT of, like, this is horrible. And, you know, I was a WWE fan my whole life. My goal was to be a women's champion and to main event WrestleMania because women hadn't done that yet then. And here I am, finally, WWE says yes. And it was horrible, professionally horrible, personally horrible. My whole life fell apart. And that was the moment of like, I don't even think I want to be a wrestler anymore. When I got released from NXT, it was like, the first thing I did was sign up for college because I was like, I think I'm just going to be a normal person. I think I'm done with all of this. You know, but then there was Impact again. And Scott D'Amore called me right away and was like, we would love to have you. You're on my list to work with. Like, come in and just let's see what happens. You know, and thank God he did, because Impact really like reignited this passion for wrestling that I really lost.
So what was so bad about NXT? Was it the way it was run? Was it the way they treated you? Or was it a combination of all?
It was a little bit of a combination of everything. It was, you know, I had come off of being at Ring of Honor and doing such great things. I was wrestling all over the world on indies every weekend, multiple times a weekend, making money, like doing the wrestler thing, right? I was at my peak. And I think just where I saw myself compared to what they saw me as was totally different. And then, you know, they asked me to change some things, so I changed some things. And then they asked me to change more things. And I, you know, we just butt heads because I just felt like, you know, I'm working so hard and I'm trying to prove myself and you guys aren't seeing that. So we just butt heads constantly. And, you know, then there were some things that went on in my personal life. I had a horrible breakup, you know, that kind of bled into work and, you know, lost a lot of friends and things like that, that overall it just was a combination of like my professional life, you know, not being as successful as I thought I could be if they gave me the chance, but then also like a lot of behind the scenes in my personal life not working out, that it was just like this perfect storm but horrible storm combination that I just like, I'm done. I'm so done.
What I found interesting too, and Brian contested this because he's got the same list of people that you wrestled before you got their impact there in 20, is just unreal. And I had to like look at it twice. I'm like, you're wrestling Asuka on Raw. You're wrestling Rhea Ripley for the NXT UK division. You've been to Stardom. You've been to Shimmer. You've been, like Brian said, you've done it all. And it's just like, how... That's the thing that maddened me when I was watching NXT when you're wrestling. And it's just like, how can you not, you know, find something for a talent like Deonna Purrazzo? It's like, what the... Anyways, that got my rant out of the way anyways. But, you know, you get released there from NXT in April of 20. Literally a month later, you're contacted by Madison Rayne to come into Impact.
Yeah.
How... with the pun intended, I guess, how impactful has Madison been on your career?
Yeah. Oh gosh. Like, and I think because, you know, we don't post pictures together and we're not always Instagramming and tagging, like people don't realize mine and Madison's relationship. And even before coming into Impact, you know, Madison and I have been friends for 6 or 7 years. You know, I wrestled her. I came back to Impact in 2016, did Knockouts Knockdown. I wrestled her. And since then it was like, we've been like this, so tight. And she's someone I talk to, if not every day, every other day. I can tell her anything. We talk about our real lives. She really is one of my very closest friends. So she kind of knew how I was feeling in NXT already and always made it known of like, if there's anything I could do for you, if you decide to quit or you get released or whatever, like she's always been one of my biggest supporters and my biggest fans. And she's always been willing to do above and beyond whatever she can for me. For whatever reason, she believes in me. And you know, I can never thank her enough, but she's one of my very, very closest friends.
When I left Impact Wrestling and signed with NWA, I believe that was when your move to Impact was more, I don't know how this keeps coming up, but anyway, impactful. and when I got there, you were like really, really a wonderful person to me when I first came in, accepted me right away. And I just noticed too, that the respect that you had in the locker room was absolutely unbelievable. And I immediately knew, looking over and looking what I see, I'm a very, very, very nosy and visual person. And I just noticed the respect that you got from the men and the women. And I thought it was really cool. And I immediately went, okay, I have to work with this chick. I really do have to work with this chick. And I did several times. And yeah. You're so professional too, which I love. You take it very serious. I want to say this the right way to where it doesn't come off negative on the dirt sheets or something, but
it will. Well,
since when has that bothered you before, Brian?
Well, it's starting to get to me. But the professionalism now of women's wrestling is so different than what it used to be in my earlier career. Yeah. And like the intense, the perfection, the I want to do it like this, like that, to make it good is there with you. You know what I mean? And I've worked with you so many times now at this point. And there's a funny story I'm going to get into later. We'll get to that. But you just tripped me out with that. And I just will never forget it. It was just completely fucking awesome. And we're going to laugh about it in a little while. But my point to the whole conversation was that I didn't know you on that level when I came back to Impact, and I quickly got there quickly. I mean, we became really good friends quick. Me and Steve became really good friends in the locker room there. And I didn't even know y'all were together, to be honest with you, when I first came back there.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool to figure that out. I was like, oh shit. Okay. All right. Here we go. There are a couple. but the business has changed so much, and you're such a professional, and the way that you work. And we described this earlier. Before you got on, I told, you know, RJ that I just haven't seen the technical side of a woman as much as I saw with you. So my question to you, with the compliment as well, is where are you getting all this technical shit? Who the fuck's training you to do this shit?
I think so. My trainer, Damian Adams in New Jersey, the building we started in 2012 was like an old high school building. And it was just a small little room with a low ceiling that literally you just fit in. Like you could just fit the ring in. And the ring was like pushed up against two walls this way. So you couldn't like go outside on like two of the sides. And
might have been done on purpose.
Huh?
With it by the door to where you couldn't get out, that might have been done on purpose.
Yeah, maybe. yeah, so like you couldn't go to the top rope because the ceiling was so low, the ring just fit in there. And so, you know, he just harped on like this old school American style that was all about like technical wrestling and holds and giving me a platform to be able to wrestle anybody. If you can grab a hold, if you can communicate, if you can just like wrestle in this style that, yeah, you could do a little bit of lucha. You could do a little bit of Japanese style. You could do anything. You will be successful because you could work with anybody. So he really just like grounded me in staying on my feet and knowing when to grab a hold and knowing when the crowd needs to settle and things like that. But then some of my favorite wrestlers were Eddie Guerrero, Dean Malenko, Randy Orton. And I still go back and I watch Chris Jericho and I watch Owen Hart and Bret Hart and just try to take like little bits and pieces of them. Even going back to, old school with Johnny Saint and the European wrestling. I really, really love it. I think it's so intricate and so detailed that it's fun to be a woman and bring that out because you don't get to see it very often.
One more quick thing, and I should know the name, and I'm sorry I don't, but do you remember the chick that was aligned with Ring of Honor that came in and wrestled you?
Yes, Roxy.
That was, like, amazing, crazy.
Thank you.
I mean, the way that y'all maneuvered out of finishes and holds and stuff was I didn't think there was another woman out there that could do it like you, to be quite honest with you. And I hope I'm not offending anybody. I'm talking about your style. That'll hit the dirt sheets too, that I'm bashing everybody else. I don't give a fuck, whatever. But that was really cool. I don't, RJ, is there anything that we touched on note-wise? Because I never saw anything.
I believe she's now in, it's Roxanne Perez now, correct, Deanna?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. And she ended up being the, I guess, the last Ring of Honor women's champion before they got, before ROH got bought by Tony Khan there. And I believe Mercedes Martinez is their champion now. But yeah, it was just absolutely phenomenal. You see a lot of, pretty much from 2017, 2018, she and a lot of these talent, like yourself included, Chelsea, Britt, Roxy, it's kind of just dispersing and making the women's division all over the place. Just, you get that revolution. You know, they had it in, WWE there. And now you're starting to see kind of it developed throughout Impact. Got like yourself there. You got Mickey. You got Jordan. A lot of these great talents and Impact. Then you go all over the place. Is that something? Obviously, you went to Stardom. You went to Shimmer. Is that something that you said, okay, let's kind of bring that type of wrestling over here to the States?
No, I don't think it was a conscious choice for me. I think that Damien again. My finish became the Fujiwara armbar by mistake. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, again, a conscious choice. It was like I was on an indie show, an all-women show at NYWC in Long Island, and I was working a girl mid. We were like mid match of the on the card, and he was like, "Hey, could you maybe like work the arm?" The promoter asked, and I was like, "Yeah, sure." And I was a preschool teacher at the time, so I had left work. I was on my way up to New York, and I asked Damien, who was with me, like, "What can I do on the arm? Like, what's a good finisher for the arm?" And he was like, "You should do the Fujiwara armbar." And I was like, "Okay, cool. What's that?" So as I'm driving, we're in traffic, and he's showing me videos of it, and I'm like, "Okay, cool. Yeah, I'll do that." And from that day on, like, it just, something clicked in me that that was what I was going to do. And I just, like, kind of built this style around, again, very, I don't know if it's very American anymore, but, like, you know, how do you go, for the finish. And then when you get it, the crowd will realize you went for it earlier and pop bigger for it now. And he had me establish this whole move, this move set around the Fujiwara armbar. And, you know, that was heavily became who I am and what I'm known for. And technical wrestling, like, I don't actually think I'm the greatest technical wrestler in the world, but I can get into my finish, which is a submission, you know, 5 or 6 different ways. So it appears that I'm the greatest technical wrestler in the world. But I think that things like that maybe started in Japan, and I don't know. It wasn't a cognizant choice. I didn't say I'm going to be this type of wrestler. It just kind of fell into my lap.
Wow.
Well, it's worked out so far for you. I think you're pretty, you made it work.
I think so.
So did you say you were a school teacher?
Yeah, I was a preschool teacher.
Deanna, how many kids did you smack?
None, but there was a couple that I would like to have. No, now the headline is going to be like, Deanna wants to abuse children. No, I had a good job. We had a reward system, but I'm a very tough love kind of person. And, you know, I think that with kids, it's important to show tough love, but also give them the love when they need it. And that was very much the teacher that I was.
That's awesome. So, by the way, for all you listeners, if you are a fan of Deanna and you think that you are a tough man and you want to challenge someone like her, you better watch your ass, because she will beat your ass. She's one of the toughest I know, but I'm gonna get to something about that later on. But damn, school teacher, I'd have never pegged you.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's like, we're gonna take a snippet of this, Deanna, and just kind of just put this for your play this for your future children when you and Steve decide, if that's something you decide. Children aren't for everybody, but man, that's something we can play for your future children. it definitely takes a Marine to make sure to hell of a combination between the virtuoso and a Marine. So
yeah, definitely interesting. Our well, it's funny because I'm so not the virtuoso in real life, right? Like, I get to the ring and she's like, cool, calm and collected and can do everything. And in real life, I'm a train wreck, like panic attacks all the time. Like, don't know what I'm doing, freaking out right before I go through the curtain. I just have like a moment of like, and then here I am. But it's the TV that gets me, because in my real life, everything's a mess. I am messy. You know, I'm a walking tornado, Steve likes to say. So.
What's actually really funny about you is she's right. I've seen her this way. Like, but she's the calmest tornado. Like, she's not trying to tear no houses down, but she's trying to just take the shingles off, but not the roof.
Yeah, I don't need to be category 5.
No, you're not a cat 5. You're like a cat 1, barely got there. But you're cool. But it's really weird. It's really weird. But you're exactly right. You explained yourself very well.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Deanna.
I said that's the first step, right?
Yeah.
Know yourself.
It's either that or you get shown pictures of your pups and then you just like, you melt then, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But we'll talk about, you know, you come in here to Impact and you immediately get thrusted into a feud here with Jordynne Grace. Hell of a promo when you came in, I have to say that.
Thank you.
Introducing yourself as the Virtuosa. Is that something that, you know, you can pretty much wrestle with pretty much anybody? You've wrestled Britt, you've wrestled Chelsea, you've wrestled Mickey, you've wrestled Tasha, everybody. Jordynne Grace is a different type of wrestler.
Yeah.
How did you, I with all due respect, I didn't mean that badly, but
no,
how'd you prepare yourself for that type of, you know, program with her?
Yeah, I think that was so important to me because it was my first, you know, post NXT, post WWE thing. And I went into NXT with so much hype and so much like, oh my God, she's amazing. She's going to do amazing things. And unfortunately it didn't happen that way. So now I had to re-show myself to the world and re-show them like, hey, no, I am good. And just shit didn't work out, you know, and I really went to the gym extra hard, like was in a ring multiple times a week to just like get my cardio up and go through ideas and walk through new moves and how to get into the arm bar and knowing what Jordan did and how to use that against her and things like that. So it, I really took, you know, that I came in May, we worked to Slammiversary in July. So those 2 months were like the most focused I had been in a long time at that point, because I just wanted this Slammiversary match, me winning the Knockouts Championship for the first time, to be my reintroduction to the world of like, oh, this bitch still has it. Hell yeah. And I think that that match with Jordan was the most perfect professional wrestling match I will ever have in my entire life. I cannot, like, Jordan is so good at everything, right? She can do a little bit of lucha. She can run fast. She's strong as hell. But she can also do the technical wrestling and throw you around. And like, you just never really know what you're going to get with her. And she doesn't know her own strength. So you're beating the hell out of each other. But I just think we have such great chemistry. We're really great friends, you know, in real life. And anytime I work with her, it's magic to me. So that match is like the epitome of what I think is perfect wrestling. Me and Jordan at Slammiversary 2020.
Yeah, because you had that summer of 20. It's like, holy crap. I think that was one of the best views of the summer, to be honest with you, with yourself and Jordan. Because like you said, you come in here, you have her at Slammiversary in July. You have a 30-minute, first ever, mind you, first ever Knockouts 30-minute Ironman match.
Yeah.
At Emergence. And it's just, like you said, boy, you guys can literally do anything. And it's just like, it's on showcase there. And it's like, man, if anybody really wants to watch, you know, really great technical wrestling, you got to watch these two matches really from 2020 here. Because it's just, you really get, it's like a peek behind the curtain into how you can do literally everything and still get everything over. You submitted Grace to win your first title there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you defend it against, like, holy mother of Mary. Maybe it's just me, but it's like unbelievable.
when I've noticed too that when you get the belt, you don't lose it quickly. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it was I wasn't supposed to have it as long as I did, for sure. But you know, things happen and you have to like roll with the punches and figure it out. But I think that, you know, I don't know, in my opinion, it's easier to have a heel champion and to have a baby face on the chase, you know? So I think it just makes for more drama and it makes it more interesting. And I feel like heels have better long runs. And for me, it was constantly trying to like, okay, so the Virtuoso won it. That's my reintroduction. Now I win it for the, you know, I lose it to Sue at Bound for Glory 2020, but I win it back in a no DQ match. So how do we, you know, the Fujiwara armbar wouldn't make Sue Young, this demon person, tap out. So I need a new finish. There came the pile driver, you know, in a no DQ match with which no one's ever seen me really do before. So how do you constantly like up your game and reinvent yourself and show new sides of you? And I think that's what makes it the most interesting. But these long title runs, they don't get boring.
And I think that's really cool and interesting. And there's something that I heard or read, I don't remember which, and it doesn't matter. I just want to see if you can agree with this or not, which I think is fate, is that you're right. You weren't supposed to have it as long as you were supposed to, is what I was told. Yeah. Or what I heard or read. I don't remember which. I really don't. But anyway, I read or heard that at one point you were supposed to drop a title. Someone got hurt. You went over. Then there was another occasion that you were supposed to drop the belt. I believe someone else was hurt or something to that effect. Can you touch on that and elaborate?
Yeah. So, yeah, Bound for Glory, Kylie got hurt. My surprise opponent was Sue. So I did lose. And then, they had me win it back three or four weeks later in a no DQ match. And then there was supposed to be like one other time right before Slammiversary, I believe, 2021, where I ended up wrestling Thunder Rosa, that I was maybe going to lose. But then I was doing stuff with AAA. And there was like, I don't know whether it was a miscommunication or what it was, but my AAA match for Triple Mania became a title versus title match. And so then I couldn't lose because I was, I had already said I'd put the title on the line. And so I had went to them with like, I'm so down to do whatever you need. And if it can't, if I'm not the champion, that's so fine. But like, whoever then is the champion needs to go to Triple Mania and not me. You know what I mean? And that way the Knockouts Championship is still defended. It's still title versus title. But like now there's other implications and other things involved that are bigger than just this one match, right? So then I ended up keeping it. You know what? I they didn't know what my match at Slam was going to be because I was supposed to wrestle somebody else and then they had to leave. And it was a whole thing. So that mystery opponent was really like, I didn't know until a couple days before who I was wrestling. And yeah, then like Mickey got released and it all kind of just like fell into place. But yeah, there was like those two times that I was supposed to lose and then things happened and then I was maybe gonna lose but maybe not and no one really could figure it out, but there were so many outside forces happening that just had me hold on to it way longer.
So Deanna, not that you're arguing the fact, but you know that's fate, right?
I am such a believer in everything happens for a reason in fate, and absolutely I think that I needed it for my confidence, and I don't know what the universe was giving me, but they gave me everything I needed.
That's amazing. It really is. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It's so cool. So cool.
So you won the title, like you said, you mentioned there, you beat Sue, DQ. You won the title back there in November. You would then hold it for another 343 days.
Yeah.
Holy crap. Like Brian said, when you win a title, you hold on to it for quite some time.
You
beat the likes of Masha Slamovich, which I desperately want to see that again very, very soon in Impact for sure, because the way she's been coming into the company, like secondly coming in again, I'm like, oh, that would be perfect to see a Deanna and Masha match. I'm like, huh, interesting. but was that something that they pitched to you that, hey, we're going to keep it on you for this amount of time? Or is it something that it would just, you just kind of went with the flow kind of thing?
Yeah. Like I said, I think that, you know, like once, Bound for Glory happened and then it was like, everything was kind of tossed out the window. You know what I mean? It was like, we just all had to go with flow, not just me, but the whole company as a whole had to be like, okay, how do we reassess and what do we do that's going to work best for everybody? So, you know, like I said, I just kind of was like, you know, they had me set up to wrestle Jazz and wrestle ODB and then kind of do this like Legend Killer-esque kind of thing. But then I was working with AAA and there were just so many outside factors that it was just kind of like, I'm down to do whatever. And, you know, we're lucky if you get one run. So I'm going to capitalize the most I can until it's not my time anymore and take it for what it's worth and be grateful. So I just did whatever they asked me to do.
So we're going to close this second count. And I know you're probably thinking, what the fuck's he talking about? We have three counts on our show, obviously. I was a referee, 1, 2, 3. So this is our second count. So we're going to close this out. But we want to talk about the name Virtuoso real quick. So where did it come from? Who came up with it? And what did it mean to you when you came up with it or whoever came up with it? Just give me the backstory of that.
Yeah. So I was in Ring of Honor 2015. And they were like, hey, you know, Deanna Purrazzo is great, but you need to be something. You know what I mean? We need a little something more. Some kind of moniker, some kind of nickname, something. And, you know, obviously I had this more technical wrestling style and I wanted to pay homage to that. But I didn't want to be the mechanic, the technician, the whatever. So I was trying to find like, you know, Italian words or Latin words that would translate. And one of the first ones I found was virtuoso. And, you know, I kind of was like, it kind of sounds weird. And if you don't know how to say it, you know, then it sounds completely wrong. And, you know, people might not know what it means because it's not, you know, an English word and it's going to be an education process. So no, scrapped it. But I kind of couldn't come up with anything better. And I kept coming back to that. Like, it's really pretty. It's feminine. I am Italian. It works for me. You know, it didn't really have any character traits to it, but it was just like, okay, I'm the virtuosa. That's who I am. And I just went with it. And Ring of Honor was like, cool, okay. And let me come out to with it. But then, you know, when I got to NXT, it was like, okay, you have this. And I never really had to explain it before. Like, it seemed like the fans just got it. Right. You know, they understood what I was going for. But when I got to NXT, it was like, well, what does virtuosa mean? And I was like, okay, well, the literal, you know, Webster Dictionary definition is blah, 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 blah. And it was like, okay, but like, if that's who you are, then we need to see that. And that's when I really started to like up my gear designs and work with real like rhinestones and crystals and get jackets and have new boots made and really tried to up my appearance. Because I think that, you know, a virtuosa is someone who has outstanding technical abilities, and it really pertains to art and music and playing instruments primarily. But I think that can also translate into fashion. And I think that my jackets are really a great example of art and my artistry and what the virtuosa is. Very medieval, very, you know, Victorian and Elizabethan and all these different time periods that I really try to hone in on, bring that element to life, you know. And then my entrance music had to be a part of that. So it started out as just really just like a word that I was like, I'm going to be this today. And then it stuck. And then I had to develop an entire character around it. And that's how we got to where we are today.
That is awesome. So there's two more things I want to say that before I break it to our third count. First of all, I have seen you in some crazy outfits since I've been there. And I mean, some of them I was just like, remember the one that you wore where you kind of had to alter it because it had the big pointy hat or whatever it was?
Yes. Yes. Bound okay. For 21.
Yes. It was hilarious. You didn't know what to do with the darn thing.
No, and I ordered it purple and it came white. And I was like, oh no, I will be canceled if I wear this white Pope hat, but it did not look like a Pope hat. And I was like, oh my goodness, no, this is so, so horrible and not what I ordered. So thankfully, right before Halloween, of course, Chelsea and I went to every CVS in Las Vegas. And they have, you know, hairspray that colors hair. And around Halloween time, you can get purple, you can get blue, you can get orange. We bought every single container of this colored hairspray that we could find at every CVS in the immediate area in Las Vegas. And I went back to the hotel room and I laid down a giant towel on our bathroom floor. And I said, I'm going to try to make it purple because it was pearl white. And it was beautiful. It was meant to be a Pope hat. Like, the inspiration was Rihanna at the Met Gala, and she's got the hat and the matching jacket, but it did not look like that. And so I said to Steve, like, let me work some magic here, let's see what happens. And it came out perfect, but it was a process.
And I totally remember that. It was so funny. And then I just want to touch on two more things real quick.
Yeah.
Because we touched on it, and I just wanted to put them over in a way. So we talked about Masha.
Yeah.
And I think Masha is, I want to commend Impact, actually, because of the way they packaged her and the way that they gave her weeks and weeks and weeks, almost months, right, at this point, where she just squashed people and people got to get with her character. And I thought that's what made it so intriguing and still has me intrigued, just like me and RJ, want to see that again. And I think that's hats off to the powers that be at Impact. And that's, I wanted to put that over. And then I also wanted to put over Miss Chelsea Green, because first of all, I love her. She's full of life, just like you. And y'all break my day every time I see y'all. You'll make me laugh like to no end. And what a milestone of just really getting the business and learning it and becoming a good professional wrestler. Yeah. Would you not have to agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And she cares so much, and you can tell. And she doesn't accept just getting in the ring and getting the job done. She wants to get in there and she wants to work hard and she wants to have a good match. She wants to be a better wrestler. Mm-hmm. I know that she was shoved down people's throats at first when she was Laura Vanessa. She was not ready. She just wasn't at that time. And no knock on her. I would take money and do what I got to do too. You know what I mean? And I think that that's what she was probably had to do to get her foot in the door. But my God, she has jumped leaps and bounds. So I just wanted to put her over because I know that you love her so much. I love her so much. So we're going to love her now. And that's awesome.
Yes. Oh, I love her to death. And, you know, like, I remember we were extras at NXT for something. And she's like, I don't even remember who. Someone texted me I should come to Impact and, like, do some extra work. And I was like, hell yeah, you should. Go. And she's like, oh, I don't know. I said, this is a good thing. Like, you should do it all. Go and do it. And then she got the job. And, you know, Chelsea's the first person to admit, like, I don't know wrestling. Like, I didn't grow up a big wrestling fan. Like, I kind of just fell into wrestling. But she has worked so hard to get where she is. And so hard to learn what she's good at and hone in on what she's good at and still be a character, because she loves acting and she loves the putting on a show aspect of what we do. That, you know, and we always say, had we met when we were both, you know, like 12 or 13, we would have hated each other, because I was such a wrestling fan and I was like, you need to be an indie wrestler to be a wrestler and these models and blah, blah, blah. And that's her. Like, I just Googled how to be a WWE diva one day. But you have to find common ground and you have to accept that even if you didn't come from the same background, you know, we all ended up in the same place and everyone has their own path and journey. And as long as you're giving it 100% while you're on this journey, then who cares? And she gives it 110,000% every time she steps in the ring. So, you know, even if she wasn't my absolute best friend and my matron of honor, I would still love her as much, because I see the hard work she puts in and the respect she has and how much she wants to do good for the people she works with.
I totally agree. All right, RJ, I'm going to stop because I could talk to Deanna all night long. On up to the third count, brother.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your third count. Count.
All right, Brian, so we got a special segment here. Third count, where we go over the match that you had with Mickie James from Hard to Kill 2022 in January, a Texas death match, another first for the knockout division, where you guys main evented a Impact pay-per-view. What I want to play for you real quick, I ruined the surprise that Brian failed to tell me that he wanted to keep it a surprise, but so be it. This is the promo that you did. I kind of cut it up a little bit, but this is a promo that you did right before the match. So let me hit play. Let me know if you can't hear it. I can put it up for you.
What type of athlete is waiting to step up to go? Queen's Gambit! She just dumped her on her head! It's Mickie James! It's Mickie James!
Thing is, this is my moment and my knockouts division.
I personally would like to invite you to come to Empower.
Why don't you do us all a favor and grab your trash bag and get the hell out of here?
You do not disrespect Mickie James.
This is hardcore country, Mickie James!
Her actions at NWA 73 were so disrespectful.
Mickie James victorious.
Virtuosa is ready to take out anybody who may stand in her way. And now the world knows it, and certainly Mickie James knows it.
What better place to become Knockouts champion again than at Bound for Glory against you?
The answer is hell no.
Wrestlers don't make matches. They don't get to turn them down either.
They have to be an idiot to turn down a match. Mickie James challenging Deonna Purrazzo at Bound for Glory for the Knockouts Championship.
All right, so forgive me. That was for the Bound for Glory. But that just kind of gives you a little bit of context for everybody that's listening, the context to this type of feud that you guys had. It's context where you go to Empower, you wrestle there, you come to NWA 73 during her match. Just the storytelling, even before we get here to Hard to Kill, just absolutely phenomenal. Is that something that you and Mickie kind of went over? Was it something that the office went over and said, hey, let's try this and see what happens?
I don't know. Like, I think that Mickie coming in at Slammiversary was kind of like a last minute thing. And then we had some physicality there where I tell her, like, you know, get your trash bag and get the hell out. And then she kicks me. And I remember, you know, when I got my creative, like the day before I left or whatever it was, calling, you know, Robert Evans, one of our head writers, and just saying, like, do you think this is too soon? Right. Because I knew we would be building at least until Bound for Glory, because that's our next biggest pay-per-view. But I was a bit worried of, like, we have so much potential storytelling here that is starting with physicality going to make it hard to keep it interesting as long as, you know, the next 3 or 4 months. And, you know, they were like, well, is there something better? Or, you know, what do you think? Let's come up with ideas. Let's kind of shoot shit about this and see. And, you know, they just landed on, we think the physicality is the best way to introduce Mickey back. And you know what, like I said earlier, like, I was just, I can raise the questions and I can ask, but at the end of the day, I'm here to do whatever you want me to do. And that's my job. So, you know, we did it. And I think that it really got the impression that they wanted. It was like, oh shit, she's back. And this is going to be interesting, you know, and then all the layers that we got to add to it, winning the Reina de Reinas championship at Triple Mania. And then being able to defend the Knockouts championship against Melina, one of Mickey's very best friends, at Empower, and then staying for it. Like, there was just so much opportunity because so many companies were working together and this forbidden door that, it made it so much more interesting to have this story kind of bleed through all these other companies. So yeah, it wasn't anything I think that was maybe discussed beforehand, at least not to my knowledge, but it was something that we really got to capitalize on for sure.
Two things about that segment that we just played. First of all, I thought it was awesome. And there was two things that happened in that. You brought up points that matter. The bag. Okay. How dirty shit you say. How dare you say that? And then just being what you probably already know, which puts things over, is being that chicken shit fucking heel. And I love that. And I fucking love that. And I mean, anyone who doesn't, God, go watch JBL. He's the greatest chicken shit heel. That's the stuff that he did that you're doing that makes you so great. I mean, and you do it well. It's so awesome. Do you accept this challenge? No, I don't fucking take this challenge. No, fuck you. Go back. It's fucking great. It's good stuff. I love that. I don't know if RJ played the wrong one, the right one. I don't care. That was awesome. I loved it.
Thank you. I played the right one. I just forgot. I put Hard to Kill by it and I thought, it's my mix up. This is not why we can't have nice things, you know? but to get the context to the, you know, the build up to this match where you basically did, you threw everything at each other besides a kitchen sink. Then Hard to Kill comes in January. Texas Death Match, you're in Dallas. You got to have a Texas Death Match sometime, right? And it goes back to what we talked about before, Dion. It's like you can literally do it all. You can have Texas Death Matches. You can have Lucha matches in AAA. You can have, you know, ground to pound matches with, you know, Jordan or Su Young or whomever. But did they say, okay, this is going to be it. This is going to be the, you know, the last time you guys are going to face potentially. How did the Texas Deathmatch idea come up?
Yeah, they just said, like, they had asked us, like, do you have any ideas? There needs to be a stipulation. And then at the end of the day, it was like, hey, we're in Dallas. Let's capitalize on it. There's never been a women's Texas Deathmatch with, like, I guess, traditional Texas Deathmatch rules. There's never been a Knockouts Championship pay-per-view main event match. Let's capitalize on that. So I think that they just were like, here's what we're thinking. And we were just like, again, let's freaking do it and let's try to kill it, because these are two firsts, and today, especially for women, there's not very many left, so let's do it all and knock it all out at once.
So before we dive into this match, there's a couple things I wanted to bring up that's pretty neat and pretty cool. So the day of that show, I remember I didn't have your match. I had the Moose match. And I don't even remember who it was. I'm sorry. I'm terrible at that. You probably do, because you're great at that stuff. But I remember, I believe you as well, but more Mickey that I remember that really wanted me to do the match. And I had no problem with it, and I wanted to do it. And then Moose kind of got boo-boo-faced because he wanted me to do his. And ultimately, Scott decided, because I think you and Mickey had told him y'all wanted me to do your match. That was pretty X-nated, and there was no questions asked, and that was it, which I was so happy because I wanted to do it. Secondly, this is when you were your Tornado One. You were kind of a wreck, but a calm wreck. You were a calm wreck. And you weren't, you just, you, the description, I hope I say right, is, was indecisive, not sure, not scared. You weren't scared at all. You just were not sure, because this was not something that you do on a daily basis kind of thing.
Yeah.
And yes, and wanted it to look good and wanted it to be really good because of the situation of it being the women having the main event. So it was a day. It was a good day. And it was a challenge for us all. And it was awesome. Yeah. Mickey was also, by the way, and if she's going to listen or listened and whatever, she was a wreck too. Don't think she wasn't. I know her very, very well. So yeah. I had basically two Tornado Ones, maybe one, maybe a turning into a two, but it was something. It was awesome. And anyway, we'll get to the match. It was great.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, I'm the queen of gear issues, and my gear doesn't show up, doesn't fit. It's not what I asked it to be. It's not the right color. And my gear didn't show up. So I didn't have gear. And yeah, then I didn't get my hair and makeup done until like the show had started, and there wasn't time to do my hair. So Chelsea was doing my hair, and just a day. Oh my gosh, it was a day.
Is this the Brian? I'm trying to go back and look and do a little research on the fly, but this is the first time you had a match with Deanna, right? You did a few TVs, right?
Oh, I worked with her several times before.
Okay, that's
that.
What I thought. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
And for context, Brian, I actually looked it up. You had the Moose was in a triple threat match right before theirs against Matt Cardona and W. Morrissey for the Impact title.
Yes.
That was my original signed assignment. And I'm the one that does the assignments. But the reason why I did it that way is because I knew Moose was going to be the way Moose was. And don't get me wrong, this is a compliment to me, that Moose wanted me to be his ref. And I knew I was going to have to fight that. So I didn't want to fucking do that. I was just like, you know, fuck it. So Mickey got with me early in the day. She's like, you have my match, right? And I was like, I don't. She was like, bullshit. And I'm being dead serious. And she was like, well, that's not cool. And I was like, well, let me just work on things. And then I got around Deanna. Deanna's like, you're my referee, right? And I was like, no, I'm not. She's like, okay. Well, you know, we're the main event. I was like, I know. I'm working on things now. Mickey's already put a fire into my ass. So it was kind of like that, you know. Mickey was really intent. And I'm not sure you, I know you wanted me to be, I didn't know if you were as intent as her. She was just like, you need to make a change kind of thing. Like, yeah, fuck that.
Yeah. Honestly, I don't even remember because like I said, like I was just having a day, like I was having a breakdown. And so you're going to bring up probably a couple things that I just have like no recollection of because I was just like a zombie going through the motions, Tornado One, not knowing what's happening.
There it is.
So just going into a match like this, Deanna, to get in the right mindset. And secondly, I'll get to my second point after that, but are you going back and watching tape, watching video on not death matches, but like classic Texas death matches, whether they be like a JBL match from like a bull rope match that he had with Eddie or something. Are you going back and trying to get ideas to pitch it to it when you're talking before with Mickey?
Yeah, absolutely. I watched the bull rope match with JBL and Eddie. I watched, you know, JBL and John Cena from a pay-per-view where like Cena's got the crimson mask going. I watched a ton of stuff. I watched like old school Texas death matches where like, you know, they get the pinfall off a back elbow. Like, but they're just, you know, isn't a lot of that with women. I watched, you know, Charlotte and Becky had maybe some kind of weapons match at, you know, a pay-per-view, not not too long before that that I watched. I watched Becky and Sasha in the cage. Like, I was just like, you know, women don't really use weapons a lot. There's not a ton of material to study of how to integrate weapons for women. So, you know, I really wanted to come up with some unique stuff, especially because we had such a story going into this and it was so long and drawn out that also women don't really get that. So there were so many elements that I was like, how can we pick and choose and what could we come up with that just will culminate this whole thing the best way possible.
So like you said, Brian mentioned your category one, category two tornadoes, both of you between yourself and Mickey. When you see the ref sheet, okay, you got Brian Hebner, your ref, how, and I'm going to put him over. I try to do it at every show, but
at least once.
Well, at least once or twice, at least.
what happened to that? What happened to the last 29 episodes we did? You ain't fucking put me over none then.
Well, I got to start sometime. Come on.
All right. Well, just don't.
I might have to fib a little bit. No, but just you see in the back, you get the card. You got Brian Hebner as your referee. How relaxing and how easy does it get to know that you got a referee like Brian Hebner? You know, you're gonna be taken care of. If any, you know, shit hits the fan, you got Brian there to take care of you.
Absolutely. It's like a relaxing feeling, you know, because it's like he's my friend, so I can go through it with him. I can ask his opinion on things. I can say, like, this is kind of what we're thinking, and you know, how does that make you look, or what do you feel about this, how can we do this a little bit better. You know, obviously we were planning to bleed in this match, so it's like, do you have the gig or do I have it, and do I trust you to give it to me, do I trust you to do it? Like, there's so many different elements that especially with this type of match, it's like I want to be with someone who I trust 110%, and that's Brian. I had been in the ring with him so many times. He just is calm in there, and I needed the most calm feeling from everybody else around me because I was not calm. So when I got into the ring, I just knew, like, everyone here is on my side and everyone is going to make this the best match possible in the best way that they can for our individual jobs. And I know he was contributing to that too.
I remember before we did the in-ring introductions, I was trying to loosen you up. And I don't even know if you remember this, but we were doing in-ring introductions. So your name's not announced. So you come out and you do your thing and you get into your corner or whatever. And I walked over to you and I said, "You ready to fucking do this, girl?" And you said, "I fucking hope so."
Seems about right.
And I said, "Well, I hope fucking so too."
There's pictures of my entrance, and you know, I kind of wasn't, I'm a very emotional person only when it comes to wrestling. Like, very few things make me as emotional as wrestling does. And to be the main event, to be women, to be the first knockouts championship pay-per-view main event, like, all of these things hit me as soon as my music hit, because I didn't give a fuck before, and I just kept telling myself, like, there's another match, and then it was our turn and I was like, I'm not ready, and I just became this, like, 18-year-old the first time she was at Impact crying. And the first time I was at Impact, when I wrestled Brooke, Brian, your dad was the referee, and I was standing in the ring waiting for Brooke to make her entrance, and he was like, "You ready, kid?" And I was like, I'm not ready, because wrestling makes me so emotional. So there's a picture of my entrance at Hard to Kill, and my lips are pressed so tight together, and my eyes are, like, bulging, because I'm like, "Don't cry, Deanna. Don't cry. You're this mean heel. Everyone hates you. You can't cry, Deanna. You can't cry, Deanna." And all of the pictures are me like this, because I'm fighting back the tears in my eyes.
It was. See, the thing with me, the reason why I even went up to you, because I knew it wasn't the same virtuoso. I knew it was the best she could do to fight the nerves and the battle you were about to take on. And I was like, because I wanted to do it before in-ring introductions, not while we were getting ready to lock up, but that's why I did what I did. And when you gave me your response, I'm like, should I have fucking done that? I don't know. It was amazing. And then on the flip side, I go to Mickey And I do the same thing, you know, verbalization, maybe a little different, just like one of those. All right. You know, we have a two up, two down. We say, because it's Virginia. So if you put your hand that way and that way, it makes Virginia. And I was like, all right, two up, two down. We're ready to fucking do this. She was like, you goddamn right we are. And I'm like, oh shit. We got one that's ready to rock and roll. We got one that's hoping to rock and roll. All right, here we go.
Two up or two, oh, that's two so up good. Or two down. Oh, jeez. Maybe you should teach that to your Washington Commanders there, Brian. Maybe they can actually start doing something with it.
Hey, we won this week and I've got their damn sweatshirt. All right, give me a break.
Well, unfortunately, they have to, they got two games run through New Jersey there, so. And the only reason why I say New Jersey is because they're the New York Giants and they play in Jersey. So whatever. That's
he did that because he's putting over Macklin.
Well, but that's
I'm a New England Patriots fan, so you're not winning any points with me.
Well, see, but this is
RJ screwed it up again.
Well, I have to. That's what I do, Brian. And the thing is, though, actually, I will score points with you this time, anyways, Deanna. Is I'm actually driving to New England for the Thursday night game with the Bills and the Patriots in December.
Oh, awesome. That's a good game.
Yeah, I'm originally from outside of Buffalo, so I live out in Rochester now, but my buddy has season tickets to the Pats. He's like, yeah, you want to come out? I'm like, damn right I do. Let's go. just attack this death match. You know, you go over it. Your mindset, you're all kind of, you know, all over the place. We'll say, for better use of terms. You go through the curtain. Does it kind of all wash away when you get out there? You know, you see Brian, you see Mickey, whatever the case may be. You know, it's all better. Not really.
Oh, I think that once the bell rang, and I remember the crowd chanting like, oh, they said something, and then you sold out. And Mickey kept being like, you hear that? You hear that? And I was like, yeah, they fucking said you sold out. Like, because it had just been announced she was going to the Rumble. So yeah. I think in that moment, like, then the virtuosa came out and I was like, okay, I'm relaxed because now I don't have a choice. But like I said, while I walked through the curtain, it was, holy shit, this is happening. This is such a big thing for, you know, the Knockouts division, for me, for women's wrestling as a whole. And I felt that weight on my shoulders until the match actually started. I just kept thinking about it. And again, fighting back the tears, because like, this is what 9-year-old Deanna wanted when she wanted to be a wrestler when she grew up. You know, she wanted to make these type of impressions on women's wrestling, and now I'm getting to. So, you know, it was just really special for me.
So key highlights, and by the way, oh, that's so very nice. That's awesome. You're almost making me cry. and I'm not even shitting you. So touch on some of the highlights in your mind with this match. A couple of mine, to be honest with you, was the case at the top of the ramp, mm-hmm. when you slammed into her and we got our first sign of color. Meaning for you listeners, bleeding. That's when Mickey was busted open. I remember table spots. I remember just so many vicious things that both of you were able to take. Deanna, I don't know if the last time you watched that match, if you even watched it. I'm just telling you right now, this was, I'm going to beat the fuck out of you and we're going to apologize later in the fucking back, because fuck this, we're going to kill it. And I don't give a fuck if we both die out here. We're going to fucking do this. And I'm going to tell you right now, it translated and I never realized that. And I'll be honest with you, I watched it again this afternoon just to make sure of what I was going to say, because, you know, I don't like, and I hate saying this word in wrestling because it's not true, but I don't like the fakeism. Mm-hmm. It drives me insane. There was nothing fakeism in this match. There really wasn't. Everything was stiff. Everything was there. Everything was what men typically would be the main event for, that a woman, two women did. Cahoots to you guys, because if you think this shit's fake, watch that fucking match. Because I can tell you right now, I know both of you got hurt, and I know different occasions when it happened. And I know that's when y'all both said some crazy shit to me.
I can't even imagine what I said.
it was pretty good. But your highlights of this match, mine was the case. I thought that was so well done. That was not held back. Your bump through the table was good. The tax that you took that you didn't mean to take, I don't think.
No.
You got your hands all in and your knees. I know that fucking hurt. I know it did because it happened to me as well. Just give us some highlights of this.
Yeah, I think I haven't watched it probably since the night before. And Kelsey makes fun of me because my biggest matches I always hate. And she's like, you will never be satisfied. And I won't, because when it comes to wrestling, I'm a perfectionist. And I know that about me. And it's like almost to the point where it's a bad thing. Right. But I think that just as you were talking, things were coming back to me. And we started off the match with a little back and forth. She got a pinfall. I got a pinfall. And then we both slid out of the ring and got chairs and we're tossing them in. And then you were like kind of in the middle, dodging them, because they just ended up almost hitting you. And it was funny, like we didn't do that on purpose, but the way you sold it, because they were shoot coming for you, was funny. I think that another highlight was, the table bump, the pile driver through the table was huge. The way they reacted when I pulled the tacks out and poured them was crazy. And I had never felt that kind of energy before. And then, you know, going into the match, they had kind of asked us, like, how much time are you thinking you need? Like, you know, this is a really big deal. You could probably have as much time as you want. And we had said, I think we settled on like, I don't know, whatever it was. Maybe it was 25 minutes. When we got in the ring and got to where we had planned to do like a bar fight and throw each other on the bar and whatever it was, like we had already wasted like 15 minutes. And then I think we gave ourselves whatever we gave ourselves, you know, to finish the match. Like it was like, we have to scrap all of that. So I think a highlight for me was just like the communication between me and Mickey to get where we needed to be. Because we cut out so much stuff that we had planned, but we knew like we're the main event. It goes dark at 10:59. So if she's not raising that bell, it's all for naught, right? So I think the highlight was just like how well we worked and communicated with each other.
So I'm going to go back to that bar. That's where I want to go. And I was so hoping you'd go there, and you did. So we did have much planned over there.
Yeah.
And we did. We went heavy, and we were not where we wanted to be in the match, but it, you know what? There was so much stuff that was so good before that it didn't matter. The bar actually did not matter. It really didn't. And that's what sometimes as wrestlers and referees, when we're going over stuff, we think it does, but it really didn't matter. But what was so funny about that was that I gave Mickey the time as we went to the bar, because I couldn't give it to you because you were selling. And I said to her, I said, well, we're going to be able to get like one spot and then we're just going to have to go straight up to the ramp, you know, and get that done. She goes, oh, fuck this bar. I'll just fucking drink some beers. Shit on it. Tell Deanna, she's going to be sitting there selling like an idiot, like waiting for these spots that aren't going to happen. I was like, all right. Mm-hmm. I went and told you, you were like, oh, good. I didn't want to do these motherfuckers anyway. Tell her to spill me over the chair. So I was like, what? Do you remember that?
No. No, I had no idea. That's so funny.
And I'm like, she's like, what did she say? I said, deal her over the chairs and then let's start working our way up the ramp.
Yeah.
She did.
That's fucking great. Yeah, I, like I said, I have no, there's very few things that I can recall happening or saying in that match. And that was one of them. Another one for me was, you know, I guess I had promised my mom years and years ago that like I would never bleed on purpose. And I had given her a fair warning that like, yeah, I'll probably bleed in this match. It's a Texas death match. This is what we're doing. And she was so upset. And then she also said, I don't think you'll do it. I don't think that you'll actually do it. And I was like, okay. So we get to the spot and I was like, it all in my mind was like, my mom doesn't think I'm going to do it. And now I'm going to freaking do it. Like, so that was another moment for me where I was like, am I bleeding? And I just kept going, until I like smelt blood. And then I was like, okay, I'm good.
is this the first time you did then, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead, Brenda.
Where did you gig?
Just like at the top of my forehead in my hairline here. And it's funny because if I pull these little hairs out, I cut all my hair. So now I just have these like little tiny baby hairs that are growing back from where I cut.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. No, unfortunately, sorry. I don't have that problem. Thank God, Brian.
You would if you were a wrestler.
And then another highlight at the very end of the match. Now I'm just like on a roll is Mickey hit Matt Raywalt over the head with the guitar.
It didn't It didn't bust.
No, it didn't. So I can't imagine how much that hurt. And I'm glad it wasn't me because it was going to be me originally. And she does that and we get into the finish and she hooks and she does her thing. And as we're going up, I'm looking straight into the entire pile of tacks.
I saw that.
And I was like, And as she jumps, I like turned her body and took the DDT. And I hate myself for it because I could have taken such a better DDT than I took, but it was like tacks in my eyeballs. That's what's going to happen. Tacks in my eyeballs. And I didn't, I mean, who the hell wants that? Right. But yeah, I like last second was like, shoot, we're going to do it this way.
You know, what's funny is I saw it when I watched that today. I saw that. I noticed exactly that. And I know you could take that much better, but I understood why. And I'm glad you explained that because I know that, but I'm saying for anybody that, you know, hopefully a bunch of our listeners will go back out and watch this thing. But yeah, you're exactly right. It was where that pile was. It was a huge pile. And you still hit some of them. It wasn't many, but golly, where you're talking about when you were going to take it. Oh yes. You were going to be right in the middle of that shit. Oh, yeah.
In my eyeballs. Yeah. And that's all I could think about. And I was like, oh no, this is the end. No.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So it's funny that you brought that up because that's actually our second audio clip of the show. So let me hit that real quick. Maybe this will rejog a little bit of the your memory.
Now Perrazzo. Oh no, you gotta caught the chair.
Go for the chair right to the rim.
Sicky caught it. Tug of war of the chair. Oh! Into the tacks. Tacks into the hands, the knees of Perrazzo.
Uh-oh.
Oh, what a Perrazzo went for with the chair and then the kick. And now the big DDT. Perrazzo's down. Mickey gets the pinfall. And now the 10 count.
All right, so I'll cut it here real quick. But yeah, that was basically the setup there. You would not then, Brian would count the 10 for the win. But yeah, it's just... I think that was probably one of the, I enjoyed that ending. It really made a lot of sense because you involved, well, you weren't supposed to involve Matthew Raywalt, but it kind of helped you, but still cost you at the same time.
Yeah. And that was really important, I think, for specifically me, but you know, I think Mickey also agreed once I brought this up of like, you know, he's been just as much a part of the story as anybody. So he deserves to have his moment and his flowers in this, you know what I mean? And whether it's, you know, would be us winning or him taking the big bump, like, or getting the guitar shot, like he deserves to be a part of the culmination because he was also so much a part of this story. So I was really, really happy that we got to incorporate him into, you know, my bump to the outside and me bleeding. And then again, at that finish.
Yeah. So if you actually, I will have the link to the match in the show notes here. So if anybody that's listening to this and wants to go back and watch what we're talking about, you can certainly do that. Just click on the link. It's in YouTube. So, yeah, just absolutely phenomenal match.
So basically, for any of you sick fucks out there that want to see two women beat the living fuck out of each other, we're going to have this link up for you, and you can get on it. But I can tell you right now, you won't be disappointed, because they beat the living shit. I really believe, honestly, with all my heart, that this was the most physical women's wrestling match I've ever witnessed in my life. And I'm so proud to be a part of that. It was awesome. And I'm actually going to watch it again. I really am.
I got to watch it again. Yeah. I've just been like, there's things I didn't like about it. And then I write it off, because I'll drive myself insane if I don't just leave it to rest. So I haven't watched it probably since. And I can't believe it's almost been a year. That's what's crazy to me.
Mm-hmm. But your hair's coming in so nicely, though.
Oh, thank you. It's growing slowly but surely.
All right. So so all in all, you know, you guys get back behind through the curtain. What's the reaction from everybody behind the curtain? Everybody's, hey, round of applause, standing oh, when you get back there. Who are you going over with? You know,
yeah. When I first walked back, I don't know if it was Steve that I saw first or Chelsea that I saw first. Well, actually, before we even got to the back, Scott and Gail had come out and like met Mickey up the ramp and said a couple words and you know, and then when I walked back, I don't know if it was Steve that I saw first or Chelsea that I saw first, but I had wiped the blood. So I just kind of had blood like over my nose and kind of on the top of my head. And Chelsea was like, pose, take a picture. So I'm like this, like, with my, like, I didn't even know, you know what I mean? But yeah, everyone that was still at the arena was there to congratulate us. Yeah. And it was an incredible feeling. And I think that, you know, I don't remember, but I probably left and cried all night.
Mm-hmm. So where would this rank as of now? Obviously, you got a lot, you know, going forward in your career.
Yeah.
Knock on wood. Where does this rank with the rest of your matches that you had? Like we went down the list of people that you wrestled with, Jordan, Sue Young's, you know, a lot of the people in there in NXT. Where does this rank to those?
Yeah. I mean, I think I don't know. I think it's high just because, again, like I said, it was the culmination of all of this. You know, we spent, you know, 6-7 months telling the story. And I think that the finish, you know, with me, and there's table pieces and chair pieces, and I'm in tacks, and then Mickey standing over me was really symbolic in ways that we didn't intend it to be, but it's got to be up there. It's got to be like top five, because I think just the hard work and that went into making it such a thing, and then you know, again, just the meaning behind it, the first ever women's Texas Deathmatch, the first ever Knockouts Championship main event on a pay-per-view, you know, two generations going at it, two women who have told such an incredible story. You know, there was just so much going into it that it's got to be up there, top five for me.
But more importantly, did mom like it?
Mom never likes when I lose.
Sounds about right, right?
Likes it, and I'll get a text message like, "Oh, that bitch," and I'm like, "Okay, all right."
That's great.
So this is a personal question.
Yeah,
and you can be as honest as you want. Maybe this is one of the newlywed questions. I don't know. Is Steve tough on you as far as like criticizing? Is he honest? Is he open? Because you, when you're both wrestlers, like me and my dad, I'll give you an example. We're not a couple, by the way, but just we're kind of hard on each other. You know, like, yeah. In other words, he'll say, well, you did a great job, but there's one thing that you could have done. Or he'll say, or I'll tell him, I'll say, I thought you got lazy at the end. I think you got gassed out, you know, and he obviously should have, because he's 70 years old. But anyway, but you know what I'm saying? Like, so yeah. Where are you at on the criticizing and asking each other about your performances?
Yeah, I think that we're both very, very honest with each other and very open to hearing each other's opinions and critiques. And I actually think that I'm probably harder on him than he is on me. And I think it's just my style of wrestling. And I'm like, oh, well, I think, you know, like that was kind of wasted, or you could have done this before that. Like, I think that we watch everything each other does. And I actually am probably harder on him, but he watches everything. He's always at the monitor watching when I'm out there. And especially with now, you know, Chelsea and I have been tagging, you know, he was in a tag team for 5 years when he was in NXT with his tag partner. So like, I'm trying to think, Wesley Blake. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to think of, his name's Corey. And I'm like, what's his wrestling name? I don't know how to be a tag team wrestler. You know what I mean? I've never been in a tag team. So I particularly right now go to him with everything about tag team wrestling. What about this? What about this? How do you do a hot tag? What's an interesting new false tag? Like, how do I get the ref involved? And just, I don't know. So having him be open and honest and you know, then tell me if things go right or it didn't look good or it wasn't what you expected has just made me so much better.
Well, I'll tell you this, and I'm just giving you a word of advice, and I'm sure that Steve will back me on this. As a heel, are y'all heels now? I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah. All right. It's just so, because Chelsea's so over the fence to me, like one way or another. You have to build to that hot tag, and it's up to you guys to build that hot tag. And as long as you can get that, you're going to be great, because that's the key to being a heel tag team, is building to that hot tag. Whether you go over or not is not the important thing. It's to build to that hot tag. So you're going to have to give up to give that. You know what I mean? So, and I'm sure he'll tell you that.
But yeah. Anyway. Like I said, he's been, we've talked about this amongst us girls in the Knockouts locker room, but it's like, you know, our Impact Wrestling tag team, like men's tag team division, has always historically been so, ahead of its time and so innovative and unique. And it's like, okay, now we have women's, you know, Knockouts tag team championships. We have a tag team division. How do we continue to up the bar for women's tag team wrestling within this division? And I think, you know, having someone like Steve who did it for so long and is such a master of it. And then, you know, having Lance Storm, who's been helping us helping agent our matches and producing, you know, who has been a part of so many tag teams over his career, has only made us better tag team wrestlers and understand tag team psychology so much better. So I'm so thankful for Steve for being open and honest and be willing to make me a better wrestler, because that's ultimately how we make our living. And we want to make as much money as we can. So I got to be good, you know, and I need all the help I can get.
And as you know, we're going to have Steve on next week.
Yes.
And we're very excited about that. And just want you to know that his growth with Impact has been absolutely amazing to watch. And obviously we're going to touch on that next week. I'm not going to spoil things for next week, but RJ is a huge fan of his, and I'm a huge friend of his, you know, so it's different when you're a huge fan as a friend, but, yeah. And I don't really know if it's, he didn't have it before and now he's just discovering it. I think he had it before and now everybody's seeing it because he's able to display it. And that's how I see it.
Absolutely. And that's why, you know, like obviously we met when we were in NXT, but even just watching him in NXT, you know, I do everything with Chelsea, obviously, you know, always talked about how entertaining him and Blake were, how entertaining of selling that they can do, and just, you know, how innovative they are and how well they work together. So it was funny because I had never really seen him be a singles guy until now. And, but he was always the great wrestler. So I think that it's been shocking for the entire world because no one knew what he could do because we never saw him as a singles guy, but it was always deep down. And all, you know, and for all of us that, you know, came from WWE and didn't get to do much there and found our feet in Impact. These are all things that we pitched to do before. So they come from like who we genuinely are. And I think everything Steve's doing is genuinely who he is, and it shines through the most.
That's awesome. So, at this point, now what we want to do is we're going to get to some fan questions.
Yeah.
And I want to start with Brad Stanton. This is a weird one. He wants to know.
I'm sorry. I know what the question is. It's a problem. I know.
Okay, well, I just had to start with this one because this is going to probably. Yeah. Okay. Here we go.
Okay, Brad.
How did you like the wrestling showcase is the first part of his question.
Okay. How did I like the wrestling showcase? I had so much fun at the wrestling showcase. I think that it was an interesting dynamic to be in a triple threat match with Chelsea, but also while being tag team champions. So I think that we were outside of our comfort zone and I had a really fun match with the three of them. Awesome. And I liked Brian Hebner in the face.
Oh.
and he bumped. There's not too many matches that you do, Brian, now. Or did before that you don't bump for, you know?
Yeah, I don't bump anymore.
Well, you're smart. That's why.
Yeah, I don't bump anymore. I can get up with kids. I can throw baseball. I can sleep in my bed. I'm good to go.
So our second question comes from our good buddy, Bryant Haremsi. He says, how important is it to maintain being different by keeping the technical and submission-based style and then not fall into the traps of changing your style too much?
I think that it's hard because not everyone can do it and it's not everyone's specialty. And I think that's why I also don't, you know, like tag team wrestling, like there's no real room for it. You know what I mean? Or if it doesn't fit, I don't push it. Right. So I think that it's hard to maintain being a technical wrestler because it doesn't always fit into the context of every story you're telling or every match that you're in. You know, Mickey James and I couldn't do a Texas Death Match and grab a wrist lock, you know? So like, depending on where you are and what you're doing, it's always going to be super technical or not. But I think that's also why I like to capitalize on wrestling Masha and being able to do that, wrestling Jordan and being able to do that, and really picking my moments to shine and showcase technical wrestling instead of trying to fit it into places it doesn't particularly fit.
And then his second question pertains to the tag team of Vexed with Chelsea. He says, you touched on this briefly, but he says, how much fun are you having teaming with Chelsea and how important is it for you to help build a tag team division in Impact?
Yeah, I think we talked about that earlier and it's again, like, you know, we have this really unique opportunity that we have Knockouts World Tag Team Championships. What can we do with them? And we need to continue to grow this division and bring in more talent and put them in tag teams and not just, you know, two random people that you're like, mishmash, there you go. Two people with chemistry, two people who understand each other on some level, two people that make sense that would be together. I think on paper, you know, maybe the hot mess Chelsea Green and the virtuosa Deonna Purrazzo don't mix, but we have a chemistry because we spend so much time together and it's brought out different parts of Chelsea. It's brought out different parts of me. So it's really important to find that cohesion and continue to grow this division to the best that it can be, because it is really, really freaking good. And when you care about it and you nurture it, then that's when great things happen. So it's been really fun and it's a dream come true for both of us. So I'm so excited to see us get our tag team titles back and what else we could do.
I've got a question for you from Billy, and he's at BJ James 1969. He says, have you been doing more tag team wrestling as part of VXT? What do you enjoy most about the tag team wrestling that you're not accustomed to? And are you studying any of the other tag teams that help to inspire you?
Yeah, I think we touched on that a little earlier too. Like, well, I'm constantly studying. I'm constantly asking, you know, Steve questions, Lance questions, my trainer questions, you know. You know, Damian came down to Florida with a couple of his students for a loop of indie shows. And the first thing I asked him to do was like, hey, can we like rent out a ring at one of the schools and can you work on some tag stuff with me and Chelsea? You know, because like I said, we want to be the best we can be. And it's a foreign concept to both of us to be in tag teams. So we really needed to put in the extra work to continue to elevate ourselves and the tag division. And I think that we're really doing that.
All right. Our next question comes from our good buddy Mason at the MGB podcast. He asks, we saw Deonna wrestle in Northern Virginia several times at a local indie promotion in 2017 and 18 with Jordan Grace, Mia Yim, and Alley Cat. Which wrestlers did you wrestle with on the indies that you just knew would make the next step up to a major promotion?
Ooh, the first person that comes to mind just signed with AEW and Willow Nightingale. Mm-hmm. I have known Willow since we both started wrestling, like 2014, 15, you know, 13, 14, like back then. We were wrestling at, you know, charity shows for free in the middle of nowhere, like a million times. And, you know, as we've gone our separate ways, I've always remained that I think she's amazing and that she should be signed somewhere. And, you know, whether it was Ring of Honor at the time, she came into Impact, I said it then, you know, I've always been such a big Willow Nightingale supporter. So I think, you know, just off the top of my head, that is one particular person that I was like, she will do something. And it, you know, it was only a matter of time.
So the next question comes from Clint Carroll, and he wants to know, what is your favorite place to wrestle outside of the United States?
Ooh, in Tokyo at Korakuen Hall. That was like another, obviously, you know what I mean? Dream come true. The first time I wrestled there, I wrestled Tony Storm in a, one of the, I think it was the SWA title for Stardom. And I was a nervous wreck. Pacing back and forth behind the stage waiting for my music and my entrance, I'm crying, like, yeah, it was that was like a dream come true for me.
Well, I knew the answer, I just had to ask you because they won.
I said that's probably everybody's answer, right?
Yeah, there you go. Next question is from WWE Master 2018. Dream venue or stadium you want Impact Wrestling to do a show at?
Oh, I think that it will always be a dream for Impact to come home to Jersey and do Prudential Center in Newark.
Well, yeah, I can see that because I think they just wow. released something that they're going up to Canada for a loop too as well.
Yeah, this coming March they'll be will be in Canada. So yeah, it seems like we're exploring, you know, well, I guess Impact's always gone to Canada, right? But it's just been a while with the pandemic and stuff. So I'm interested to see like what new places I get to go to with them. Because I haven't been to Canada while I've been with Impact. And yeah, I think Newark and Prudential just has so much meaning to me. All my family and friends could be there, and what a better there's no better welcome than like a welcome home, right? So it'd be cool to see how they react.
Right.
So another question from Sean Adams, and I actually like this question. If someone asked you any stress today, your dream opponent from any company, and why would it be that?
I think the answer is always Trish Stratus.
What?
Yeah. That was my, she is still my childhood hero. And she is the person that made me want to become a professional wrestler. And I got to meet her for the first time this year and cry my eyes out. And yeah, I think that it will always, always, always be Trish Stratus.
Deanna, you gotta stop fucking crying.
It's only wrestling in real life, heartless, emotionless. My mom says it all the time. You are a cold bitch. Wrestling, not so much.
Okay. I have another one. And this one is from Brian Hebner.
Uh-oh. I know him.
If there is one thing that you want people to remember about Deonna Purrazzo, when you're done with your career,
yeah,
what is that?
We're getting deep. I think kind of already what you said about me when we started the show. I think that I want everyone to remember me for my professionalism and for how I treated the people that I worked with, and not that I was, you know, a nasty politicker who wanted what she wanted and did anything by any means necessary to get it. I think I want people to remember me for doing things on my own terms and never taking no for an answer, and that I was able to do it because I was able to do it and I was meant to do it and not because of any outside contributing factor. But most importantly, how I treated the people that I worked with. I think that's important. And I think that you always remember when people are mean to you, and you'll remember it for the rest of your life, more so than you remember the people that aren't. So I never want to be that person that was nasty to anybody or mistreated, you know, people coming up in the business or whatever, because it's genuinely not who I am. And I know how that feels. So yeah, I think I want to be remembered most for how I treated people.
I honestly think that you'll be remembered as, in my opinion, as one of the best technical women in the business and one of the sweetest and nicest people that you could deal with. You know what I mean? Because there's so many difficult people you work with in this business. And believe me, I've worked with so many difficult people. It's not even funny.
Yeah.
And I know that you're one of those people that are on top of your game. And one of those people that take your shit serious. And you know what? I respect that to no end because I take my shit serious too. And I know I'm not a wrestler. I know that. But I'm a referee. I'm a third man in the ring. And I'm a veteran that has a lot to say and a lot of input. And you know what? I gave you input. And you know what? You considered it, took it. And there were many spots that I was able to give, actually, just to give an example for you and Mickey, that both y'all said, you know what? That's good. Let's do that. Where there's people that think they're so good that they just say, well, I don't like that, because it's not your idea. You know what? Your idea is not going to go as far as what people can make your ideas be better. In other words, what I mean by that is there are people that are smarter than you and there are people that are better than you always in life, no matter what it may be. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And you only learn from that. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying that my idea is the best, but they're ideas. And that's how you grab them or don't take them. It doesn't matter one way or another. But you're recipient of those ideas. So it's a huge, huge compliment to you. And it was awesome working with you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Gerald from bodyslam.net. He asks, of all the matches you've had so far inside Impact and out of it, what's both your favorite opponent and your favorite match of your careers thus far?
Inside Impact or out of it, just like anyone? For
anyone, yeah.
I mean, I'll just go with Inside Impact, Jordynne Grace. Again, Slammiversary 2020 will be... The feeling after that and how perfect it was. And it was the perfect blend of our styles and everything. Like I said earlier, I will forever be chasing that level of what I think is perfection and what I think is my best work. So that will hands down, Jordynne Grace is one of my best opponents ever. And that match is one of my best matches ever.
All right. So I think what we're going to do is we're going to close out the questions from the wonderful fans.
Okay.
I did have a couple more, and I'm sorry about that. And if I missed you, guys, I'm sorry, but now you can understand the importance of the cutoff at 5:00. but we do have, because we do have your man upstairs that's waiting on you, I'm sure. We have a couple newlywed questions that we want to ask. We want to matches. Okay. So we want to have fun here.
Yeah.
Now I don't want to dig in your life at all. So if there's anything that you say, you know what, screw that, fuck that, Brian, ask something else. That's cool.
Okay.
But they're easy questions and there's something that hopefully he matches. Please match Steve. Please, please.
Please. I feel like it'll be me not knowing the answers, but we'll give it a whirl.
All right. You ready?
Yes.
We're going to go with question number one. What is your husband's favorite movie? Already stumped the panel, folks. Just say Superman. Shit on it.
No, I think it's, I'm looking at the Captain America thing and I'm going to say it's Captain America Winter Soldier. Is that the name? I think that's what it is.
RJ, jot that shit down. I don't watch movies. I have no fucking clue what she's talking
about.
I watched the same movie over and over again. I have no idea.
All right, Deanna, don't you be the one that screws this up.
It's going to be me.
All right, you better get these next two. These next two, these are lobs. I'm lobbing you right now.
Yeah.
What is your husband's favorite color? Are you serious right now?
Blue. I don't know. I don't know.
What the? We got a divorce coming, folks.
A divorce before we're actually married. I don't. I think it's blue. I mean, I'm going with blue. Final answer.
Final answer. All right. This is the big one.
Okay.
What is your husband's celebrity crush?
Me.
You probably know.
His celebrity crush. I feel like he's not like that. I feel like he doesn't have a celebrity crush.
His is probably a wolf or something.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like his is Frank Castle, the Punisher. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Okay.
Because we've talked about this, and I know the answer he'll give you for me. And I always say, like, oh, but if this person, like, I need a hall pass. And he's always like, there are no hall passes. I don't need a hall pass. There is nobody that I would ask for a hall pass for. And I'm like, okay, well, I want that person. And I think he'll tell you the person.
We're going to find this out because we have to have their answers before he gets on.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So Charlie Hunnam is my answer.
Who is that?
Charlie Hunnam.
Sons of Anarchy.
Okay. That would remind me.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. We're doing wonderful here.
No, he played, I forgot the dude's name, his character's name.
Oh, Jax.
Jax. Yeah. There you go. Jax, my brother named his dog after the show. He named his dog Jax. So I should know that.
The best show ever. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I feel like Steve doesn't have a celebrity crush.
All right. Well, can I give him one?
Sure.
You're going to. Well, you can't touch me, so that's cool.
Who is it?
Well, I'm going to tell you mine. I hope it's his.
Oh, God.
What? RJ, relax, bro.
Who is it?
Britney Spears, man.
Oh! Okay. I didn't know where you were going with it. I thought it was going to be something dirty or something. So
yeah. That's what I was thinking, too.
Oh. What do you guys think I am? Some pedophile?
No.
It's Britney Spears. What did you think I was going to say?
I don't know. I didn't know what you were going
to
say.
I was kind of scared, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah. My God. Okay. Well, sorry, guys. I didn't hope I didn't scare you.
I love Britney Spears for you. Love it.
Me too. She is so hot, dude. The older she gets, the hotter she gets, in my opinion. But anyway. All right. So, Deanna, what's your favorite movie?
My favorite movie is The Departed.
You think he'll get that?
It's a 50-50 shot. I'm not sure.
Well, you better not talk to him about this, because I'm going to tell you right now.
Scout's honor. All
right.
Well, you do realize you could possibly listen to it, too. You know, you
realize that, too? No, he's not playing video games. He's not.
Oh, okay.
Listen, Steve Macklin is not listening to this tomorrow. Trust me. Okay, your favorite color.
Purple.
Right. Oh, that makes sense.
I knew that already by the hat.
Yeah.
that she had to use hairspray for.
Oh man, that was the worst day of my life. I got this beautiful hat. I was so excited for it. I was like, this is not good. Not good.
All right. So I'll ask you one question to give him a heads up.
Yes.
Right. Well, don't give him a heads up. I'm saying for him. What's a question you want to ask?
Ooh,
Who wears the pants in this family? No, I'm kidding.
You should ask him what my favorite dessert is.
Favorite? Okay, we will.
Yeah.
All right. And your favorite dessert is what?
He's going to say donuts. Which it is, but my other favorite is lemon meringue pie.
Well, you just popped me. Every year for my birthday, I always tell my wife it rotates key lime pie and a lemon meringue pie.
I love lemon meringue, and it reminds me of my grandma, and it's a whole thing. So my favorite dessert is lemon meringue pie.
Well, this kind of popped me, but like my grandmother used to make them from scratch.
Oh, yum.
Oh, yeah. Goes on like a hot summer's day, you get that or a key lime. Oh, It was either that or she.
Well, we can't have two answers, so we better say donuts.
Yes, but no, the answer is key lime pie. But yeah. He's going
to say donuts. Oh, that's the true answer.
Yes, yes. But okay. I bet he's donuts.
All right, what's his favorite dessert? Oh, God. All right,
I know nothing about him. Oh, my God. He loves donuts as well. Really likes like any kind of like cake, really. You know what I mean?
Okay, so we'll go with cake. We'll go with cake. Yeah.
That's fair enough.
His cake. Birthday a couple years ago, he still talks about, and it was just like a vanilla cake with whipped cream and strawberries in it. You know what I mean?
So if he says I like vanilla cake with strawberries, then that's the correct
ding,
answer. Cake.
Ding ding ding.
Honestly, he's a gabon, which means he's a pig, and he'll
Well, there you go.
So, Deanna, is there anything that you would like to plug and put over and anything you want to do?
Yeah, I mean, everyone can follow me on social media at Deanna Perrazzo, and check out Impact Wrestling when they're in the area. I mean, that's pretty much all that I do these days.
Good for you. Good for you. So we are going to have Steve on next week and can't wait to do that. I'm very excited to talk to him and actually get everyone to know the Steve that I know.
Yeah.
And, you know, just a wonderful podcast. I really enjoyed this and I knew it was going to be a great one. And I knew we were going to laugh a lot and I knew that we were going to go longer than we always do in our podcast, and it's fine. We're happy with that.
No, it's fine. It was fun. I'm so glad we got to do it.
I am too. And I'm so sorry that we took so much of your time, and I know you're busy, and that's why I waited till today, because I knew you got home Sunday and needed Monday to relax and chill. Yeah. And awesome. Awesome. I'm so happy that you did this with us, and we're so happy for you and all your accomplishments, and you're just building stock, girl. I don't know. You got something going on, and that's cool. Awesome. And I'm very appreciative that I was able to work with you, and just good stuff. Just that's all I say. RJ, yeah. You got anything?
No, just thank you so much for taking time. It's been, since we saw you there at, the showcase there, we're like, oh, well, back to back, you know, they're getting, was it next month? You guys are getting married, right?
Yeah. 15 days, 16 days. I'm not sure what countdown is, but yeah.
Down to the home stretch.
Less than 3 weeks.
Well, as long as he knows to keep key lime pie and lemon meringue pie in the fridge, that's all that matters, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, Deanna, just one quick question. I was married for 19 years. So a heads up for you. Just you might need to figure a couple more things about him. Just letting you know. Plan a dating game. It seems like you're a little lacking on a little knowledge.
Some basic knowledge. Yeah. Gotta go ask all those questions now.
There you go.
You know.
Well, awesome. We love you. We love you so much. And thank you so, so very much.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Man, Brian, if you guys aren't following Deanna Perrazzo, her career, her social media, whatever, I would highly suggest you go do that now. Go watch that match that we have in the show links here that you had with Mickey James at Hard to Kill 2022. Man, banger of a match. I'm glad we were able to have her on.
I had such a good time, man. I really did. It was just an enjoyable podcast. There's podcasts that you sit back and relax and just, it's just all natural. And this was one of them. I just really enjoyed her. She's such a wonderful person. Can't wait to have Steve on, her better half, or maybe not better half, depending on how she looks at it. Yeah. But yeah, it was just an amazing episode, and I'm so glad. And I'm hoping that everyone got to hear it and got to see it. And it's just amazing. Really, truly amazing. And what a wonderful person.
Yeah. You know, another couple wonderful people that we're proud to have associated with the show. JD Hoop continues to produce just fantastic graphics for us. He just did. I sent it over to you over the weekend, was his rendition. If you go over to our social media at Reffing It Up, you can see the banner there of all the show art that we've had from the beginning when we started with Sting all the way up to David Pendra last week or in behind that banner. Absolutely phenomenal. We're looking to possibly make that a shirt as well. So look out for that. So big props to JD Hoop. Follow him on social medias at JD Hoop 702. You need artwork or graphics, check him out.
No doubt. JD Hoop is amazing. And I'm gonna tell you, you know, this is falling on our lap, but we're gonna do a better job of promoting some of our shirts and some things like that that he does for us. And I can just tell you, it's gonna be some good stuff. That's just our fault, you know. It is what it is. We're gonna get better at it and make it more available to you, and we're working on things here.
Yeah, and like I said, if there's something like you like, hey, I like the Sting show art, we could put it on a shirt for you. We could put it on a hoodie for you. We could put it on anything for you. Let us know at Reffin' It Up, at Baby Hebner. We'll do whatever we got to do to make you guys as happy as possible. But another guy, you got AJ McKay. Fantastic, man. I listened to it the other day. I had the AirPods in, banging out, head banging to the intro song. My son loves listening to it too. So it's over with everybody, man.
No, it is. It really, really is. AJ is just phenomenal. He really is. And I can tell you, if you watch TV, if you do Netflix, if you do movie trailers, he's on it. I can tell you that. Mm-hmm. And you'll know when you listen to the opening, you'll know. And just an amazing, another amazing, we have so many amazing people. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing. It really is. And I keep saying it. Amazing, amazing, amazing.
Well, yeah, but they are amazing. So, but guys, you guys are amazing too. So thank you for tuning in this week. Make sure you tune in next week when we have Steve Macklin on. Definitely looking forward to this. This will be a kind of return. I talked to him last year for my other show, so it's be good to catch up again and really dive deep into his career and his match that he was a part of when you did his match against, it was a triple threat match from Bound for Glory. And it was, I got to check it out because I had it written down and I closed it out. Bound for Glory 2021, when he faced Trey Miguel and El Fantasmo. Looking forward to talking about that with him too. Thoughts and processes go into that, as well as other matches that you associated with him as well.
Absolutely. And that match we pulled out exclusively because this is a different style for him. Mm-hmm. or that people imagine him being in. So we'll dive into that. Good stuff. It was more of an X division match. And you know, if you look at Steve and know who Steve is, he's not an X division looking kind of guy. Mm-hmm. But he can do it. And that's why we covered this match, because I thought he did a phenomenal job and had some amazing moments in this. And we'll go over that next week.
Sure. Yeah, definitely tell your friends, tell your family to follow us right here at Reffin' It Up across all your social medias. You can follow us website at castbuy.com/reffin'itup. You got all the links for all our platforms, merchandise, all that good stuff. Brian, you want to close shop tonight? What else you got?
I got nothing, man. I'm just so stoked that this was a great, great, great podcast. I really enjoyed it. I'm good to go, man. I'm ready for Steve Macklin to see if he can fuck up any more questions that Deanna couldn't answer either.
Definitely looking forward to that. But guys, thank you, and we'll see you right back here on Reffin' Up with Brian Hebner next week.
1, 2, 3.